Bible with me this morning, the book of Acts. Acts chapter 11. Last week I gave you a somewhat bleak picture of the church in America. I don't even know if you call that somewhat bleak, just a bleak picture of the church in America. And again, quite honestly, that's just the tip of the iceberg. There are not very many, if any, good numbers reflecting the church as a whole. There are a few exceptions to the rule, but generally speaking, the church in America is, again, there's just very few positive numbers that we can report. I am glad to tell you that all the news is not bad news. Around the world, the church is doing some amazing things. For example, in China, of all places, millions are coming to know Christ in a country that officially says there is no God. And millions are coming to know Christ. In Latin America, God is moving miraculously, doing some amazing things in Latin American countries. When we were in China 12 years ago, they told us then that the church was meeting, that they had to meet in homes, that neighborhoods had spies, and that any time they saw much of a gathering going on in a home, they would report it to the government just for whatever reason they were gathering. Rather, it was, you know, didn't matter why, if they saw a gathering, they reported them. And so they had to be careful. They would meet sometimes in parks, those kinds of things. But over the last 10 years or so, again, God has began to do some amazing things, just miraculous, amazing numbers are coming out of Asia, out of China. For those accepting Christ, again, throughout the Latin American countries, God is doing some amazing things, just miraculous, amazing numbers of people coming to see Christ. And the reason I point that out is I want you to know that even though last week I gave you some really bleak numbers regarding the church in America, I don't think God is dead. I don't think that God has forgotten man. I don't think He's given up on the plan of salvation. I think that God is still perfectly able to save. I believe He's able to bring revival to America. But I think those numbers tell us that when just one simple number that we're closing 13,000 churches a year tell us that something's got to be done. We can't continue. You can't, I don't know how many you start with, but you can't close 13,000 a year for very long and have many left in a few years. And so it's certainly some bad information, but I do believe there's hope. I do believe that there is opportunity for the Church of Jesus Christ in America, but I believe that it is just what I said, what I've called this series. It's back to the future. I think we're going to have to go back and look at how the church was formed, how it got its beginnings. When we look at the early days of the church and see that there were times when multitudes, thousands, were coming to know Christ. When we look and understand that a group of what was described as unlearned men were able to share the gospel, it is a really heavy read. It is a lengthy, well, it's not that, it looks thicker than it is. Book entitled Evangelism in the Early Church. It looks way thicker than it is because about half of it is notes and references to where all the information came from. But to understand some of the obstacles that the church had to overcome in the early days. And yet, when we look in Acts, we see an amazing church. We sit here today because those unlearned, uneducated men were able to some way, somehow, continue to spread the gospel and form churches and build churches and bring people to Christ, and again, in amazing numbers. And so it is not impossible, but I do believe that much of the answer is going to be in going back and examining that early church and seeing exactly how they did get there. How they were able to do what they did. Now, certainly methods have changed. We do some things differently just because of technological advances, those kinds of things. I certainly don't advocate going so far back to the original church that we throw out the air condition. I have become quite fond of Mr. Carrier's invention, and so. But there are some things that the early church did, some characteristics that they had. That I believe are the things that we need to return to, that we need to take those early characteristics of the church and incorporate them into what we are and who we are in the church in America in 2017. I think in many ways we have come to the point where we, to use the phrase, rest on our laurels. I have heard, as you probably have, they know where the church is, that's a great attitude. That's kind of like putting your boat in the lake and saying to the fish, well, they know where the boat is. You got to bait a hook and do some work. I think we have in many ways come to that point. And so over the next few weeks, after describing to you the picture last week, I don't want to leave you there. I want to give you what I believe when we look in the New Testament, in particular in the book of Acts. I want to draw out some things, find some things that the early church did well. And the early church did that I believe is what allowed them to impact their culture, allowed them to impact their communities, and build a great church. When we look at the early church, there are several things that went on there we can duplicate. We can do that today all across America. We can do that here. We can do that in every church in America. If we set our mind to it, we can do those same things. We have the opportunity. When we look at the early church, and again understand, for example, in Acts chapter 11, we're going to look at the church at Antioch. And the church at Antioch was an amazing church. It was an amazing operation. Totally different than anything really we do today or would have in many ways. Antioch was an interesting place. Again, I've shared with you one of my biases, one of my obstacles, is that anytime I talk about a biblical city, I always have in my mind two tents and a campfire. That's just, that's kind of a city to me in biblical times. I've got a mental block about it, and it's difficult sometimes for me to remember and to keep in my mind that there were some really metropolitan areas. There were some really large cities with a lot going on. Antioch was one of those places. Antioch was actually the third largest city in the known world. It was second, it was third behind Alexandria and Rome. It was a massive city, had all kinds of things going on. It was a city that was made up of a lot of people, a lot of different people. It was largely Gentile. It was largely non-Jew, non-Christian. But there were some Jews who had moved there. There were Christians who were moving there because of the persecution of the church in Jerusalem. Antioch is about 300 miles north and slightly west of Jerusalem. And so 300 miles to us today is a short car ride. 300 miles then was a major move. And so to move 300 miles from the source of the persecution was a major change. And so many of them were moving out of Jerusalem and moving to Antioch to be able to get away from the persecution that was going on because of their faith. Many times when a person would come to know Christ in their culture, they would be ostracized from their own family. If they were a businessman, many would then refuse to do business with them, including their own family. Much like in our world today, a Muslim family in Muslim nations, when a Muslim accepts Christ, how their own family will shun them, sometimes even execute them. And so in that culture, the Christians began to move out of Jerusalem, and many settled in Antioch. Now, that is far from making Antioch a Christian nation or a Christian city. Antioch was still a very wicked place, still very strongly influenced by the Greek culture. It was a place that many of the buildings would have names on them, titles on them, God of luck, God of fate. They still believe very strongly in the Greek gods and still had that influence. It was an area that was heavily, again, influenced by Rome. It was very populated by Roman soldiers. One of the things that went on there quite often was one of the common things was in their false worship. It was a very sex-crazed culture, very sex-crazed city. Much of what went on around prostitution. Sex was involved in their false god worship. And so all this was going on. And so when I say the church at Antioch and I say the Christians at Antioch, I'm not saying by any stretch of the imagination that they were the majority. It wasn't like they had favor. In many ways, it was very similar to where we find ourselves today. That's why I believe the church at Antioch is such a good example. They were in a foul, rotten culture, and yet somehow they manage to be a growing, solid church. Now, when I say they were a growing, solid church, I don't mean that when you walk down the street, you came across a building with a steeple on top that said First Baptist Church of Antioch. In fact, they didn't even have a building. Because of the culture, because of what was going on, they, as I described in China, most of their worship, most of their evangelism efforts went on in the workplace. They would have small gatherings at the workplace. They would have small gatherings in homes. There was no real large gathering of the church. But yet the church was multiplying and the gospel was progressing. And the Word of God was being proclaimed, and Jews and Gentiles were coming to know Christ. And because of that, the Bible tells us in Acts chapter 11 that word got back to Jerusalem, that something's going on in Antioch. And just to paraphrase, if you look there with me in that chapter beginning in verse 19, it says there that the word got back to Jerusalem. News got back over that 300 miles. Now, let me remind you that we're not talking about, again, a day of CNN and Fox News where we know almost almost instantly what went on 3,000 miles away. If something were to happen this morning in Israel, in Beijing, wherever, within seconds, it would be on our news feed. It would be on Twitter. It would be Facebook. It would be on the on satellite news. We would know it almost instantly. But we're talking about a day when they didn't have those advantages, and so the news has traveled 300 miles, and so that says something about how the movement in Antioch was, that it was such a movement that it had made the trip back 300 miles to Jerusalem, and the church leaders who were in Jerusalem began to hear about this, and it says that that they were interested. They wanted to know what was going on down there, and when that happened, they heard that they were there. It says that some of them, when they originally in some places, they only spoke to the Jews. But in Antioch, they began to speak to the Greeks as well, to the Gentiles. And because of that, it says the Lord's hand was with them, and a large number began to go and turn to the Lord. And I like that little statement. The news reached Jerusalem. They began to hear about it back home. And when they did, they said, "We've got to find out what's going on in Antioch. We've got to find out what Sunday school literature they're using. We've got to find out what evangelism program they're using. We've got to find out, are they singing praise choruses, or are they singing out of the hymnal? We've got to discover, find out what translation of the Bible they're using. We've got to find out, are they using faith or evangelism explosion, or what method of door-to-door visitation are they using? Or, we've got to find out what's going on up there in Antioch so we can duplicate what they're doing. We want to use that same program, that same literature that they're using in Antioch. So they assign a man by the name of Barnabas. You've heard of Barnabas. They tell Barnabas, you go up there and you investigate and you find out what's going on in Antioch. How are they doing what they're doing? How are they reaching the Greeks? How are they reaching the Jews? How are they building their church? What in the world is going on in Antioch? And we discover that when Barnabas arrives in Antioch, and I think this is the key. I think it's the underlying foundation. It's why we're starting here in this series after laying the groundwork for why we need it last week. And the solution and the answer is the Bible tells us that when Barnabas arrives, there in verse 20, it says, when he arrived, he saw the grace of God. Think about that. When Barnabas arrived, he saw the grace. Have you ever saw grace? Think about that. Have you ever witnessed grace? We sing about grace. We talk about grace. We study grace. But have we ever actually saw grace? An even more important question that I would ask you is, Barnabas is what was known as, what church growth people today, Barnabas is what was known as an FTA. Anybody know what an FTA is? That's an abbreviation that church growth guys use today for a first-time attender. First-time attender. And Barnabas was a first-time attender at the church in Antioch. And I find it interesting that the Bible doesn't tell us that on his first visit, when he first arrived at the church at Antioch, that he didn't see their evangelism program. He didn't see their marvelous choir. He didn't see that they were using drums and guitars or or they didn't have any instruments. It doesn't say that the preacher just knocked him out of his shoes. It doesn't say that they had a beautiful building. It doesn't say that they had greeters in the parking lot. It doesn't say that they anything about their methods or their programs or their committees or their organizations or their bylaws or their structure or all the things that consume the Church of Jesus Christ in 2017. What it says is that when Barnabas arrived, he saw the grace of God. That he witnessed, he could see it in the people, he could see it in their behavior. What do first-time attenders, people who arrive at church who don't know church, and one of the things that we have to understand is that many people who walk in the church doors today, that they're not coming from a church background. They don't know much about church. When we stand up and we say, let's sing this or let's do this, they're kind of like, they're watching to see what everyone has. Let me just put it this way. Let's make the comparison. Most of you know by now, there's a Buddhist temple in Kannapolis that near my house. Show up one Sunday for one of their services and see how you feel. You will feel completely, right off the bat, when you start in the door and they make you leave your shoes on the front porch, that would probably, throw you for a loop right off the bat. Well, that's the way, honestly, many people feel today when they walk in a Christian church. That they don't know Christian church from Buddhist church, from Mormon church, from Jehovah Witness. They don't know because they don't have that background. They don't have that. And so what do they experience? What do they notice when they walk in the door? Barnabas noticed the grace of God on these people. Now it's important for us to understand the importance of this conversation of what people notice, what they see when they first come into contact with the church, with a believer, not with this building. Not with the buildings that we've got all over town, but the church. We are the church. You are the church. Believers are the church. What do people experience? What do they notice? But just for argument's sake, let's talk about first-time attenders for a moment. Do you understand that the average church in America loses 10 to 15% of its membership due to attrition every year? Whether death or moving or just changing churches, 10 to 15% leave every church in America every year. That's the average. And so immediately, just to stay even, you got to replace 10 to 15% of the church every year. Now, where are you going to do that? You're going to have to do that from first-time attenders. You do understand that at some point, every person in this room was a first-time attender to a church somewhere. At some point, you were a first-time attender in this church. At some point, you were a first-time attender in another. Every person in here has been a first-time attender somewhere at some time. Those first-time attenders, they represent for us an opportunity to make an impact, to make an influence on their life, and to show them, again, what Barnabas experienced, the grace of God. First-time attenders, again, they're kind of an interesting group. But let me tell you a little bit about first-time attenders and how important it is for us to show grace. I'm going to talk about what that means in just a moment. But do you understand that? And again, this is something. This may be the most researched area of church growth that there is. That a first-time attender makes up his mind whether he's coming back a second time within 11 minutes of arriving on campus. From the moment he pulls in the parking lot, we have 11 minutes. The good thing about that for me as the preacher, I'm never preaching within the first 11 minutes. So it's a lot more Archie's fault if they don't come back than it is mine. 11 minutes they've made up their mind. That's how urgent it is for us to demonstrate, to display the grace of God to those people. Now, only 1 out of 10 first-time attenders will return. So you start multiplying out the math, how many first-time attenders you have to find to show them the grace in 11 minutes to make up for the 10 to 15% that die and move every year. You see the urgency, the magnitude of the task? You see the size of the task? But let me tell you this. The average church person has 20 relationships with unchurched people, unchurched person. So that means a church of 100 has an influence on 2,000 people. It's not that the people are not there. It's not that they're not out there. It's certainly not that they're not starving to hear about the grace of God. More than 75% of first-time attenders are there because they were invited by a friend or a relative. They don't just show up because we throw open the doors anymore. It doesn't work that way. A lot of you grew up in a time when you went to church because it was Sunday. You went to the church in your neighborhood because it was Sunday. Doesn't happen that way anymore. People are starving for the grace of God. Let me just throw this one at you. Out of first-time attenders, follow-up is 83% more effective if done by you than by me. Now, I'm not trying to get... I'm just telling you, it's the way it is. They expect me to do it. They expect me to be there because they look and say, well, that's how he gets paid. But they look, here's something else you need to know. That first-time attenders, if they return, need 4 friendships, 4 friends within a month if they stay for 6 months. And I don't mean the kind of friend that walks by, hey, how you doing? I mean somebody that they know their name, somebody maybe they've been out to lunch with, somebody they've shared something with. People need to see and experience the grace of God. Now, what does that mean? When we begin to say, what is it that Barnabas saw when he entered the church, when he saw this grace? What exactly does that mean? Very simply, the definition that generally floats around to describe grace is the undeserved gift of God. I mean, you can make it a lot fancier, you can make it a lot bigger, but the undeserved gift of God. And every person in here that knows Jesus Christ knows what that feels like, to experience the grace, to have your weaknesses, to have your weaknesses perfected, to have your speech changed, to have your life changed. It enables us. And it's so important that the word that is translated grace is used 156 times in the New Testament. Now, I don't know about you, but something said 156 times in 27 books must be important. Paul used it 110 times in his 13 epistles. In fact, his 13 epistles, every one of them start and end with the word grace. That's how important it was to him. Now, exactly what exactly does this grace look like? It's the grace that changes us, and I'm just going to put it very bluntly. I believe one of the number one, if not the number one, obstacle, barrier for the church reaching the world, the culture in 2017 is that great big long nose we look down at everybody who has a problem besides us. You're welcome. I love you too. We tend to forget that we too once were recipients of grace. We too forget that one day we were lost. That we were sinners. And we tend to look at the world and think, again, we just look down our nose and forget that what they need is grace. Listen, they don't need any more guilt. I'm not saying we don't call sin, sin. I'm not saying we don't call out sin, that we don't label sin. Anybody that knows me in this room, you know better. That's not what I'm saying at all. Sin is sin. It is what it is. The Bible calls it sin. If the Bible calls it sin, it was sin. It is sin. And it will always be sin. But the fact is, those who are in sin will be in sin. What they need is grace. They get beat up. They get ridiculed, many of them by their family, many of them by their parents. And what people need to understand and what they need to hear from the Church of Jesus Christ is God loves you. God died for you. He sent His Son to shed His blood for you. And it doesn't matter where you've been and what you've been or who you are. I've told y'all this story. This is no secret. I've shared with you that it's been a long time ago, and probably many of you who are here this morning were not here then. Of the man, we were having a joint service with some other churches, and I won't say which other churches and try to keep it vague. But this gentleman came in. He had a horrible past. He had been in motorcycle gangs. I don't even want to know what he had been involved in. I mean, he was full bore, wide open, Hell's Angels out. I mean, he was out there. And God reached down and miraculously, gloriously saved his rotten soul. He showed up that night in that joint service. Now, I don't know what you know about tattoos, but generally speaking, they're permanent. And he had a couple. In fact, I would say it would have been much easier to close your eyes and poke the spot that had a tattoo than didn't. I mean, he had a set. He had them. He still had the long hair. He had the blue jeans, the boots. He had the whole motorcycle gang costume. They'd probably beat me up if I called their outfit a costume, wouldn't they? He had it on. And he came in, and he sat down right back there between where Don and Mabel are. And he sat down, and I saw it. And again, there were more than just our church people here that night. You would have thought that that man was a carrier of the plague. Thank God he already knew Jesus Christ, because he would have never found him that night. Now, again, I've told you this story before. What most people didn't know is he didn't care. Because this man had a ministry. He was doing marvelous things going back to his old motorcycle gang members and friends, and going back to them and sharing the gospel with them. And many of them were coming to know Christ through his ministry. And so he didn't really care what you thought of him. But what if that would have been before he was saved? What if he would have got welcomed that way? What if he would have got treated that way? You know what happens. People come into God's house, they need to see grace. Now, let me just insert, generally speaking, I'm going to speak for this church. I'm addressing the church as a whole, but let me narrow it down for just a moment. Generally speaking, I've told people about this church, y'all are like a bunch of big old dogs coming over when you got a company. You jump up and slobber on them. Generally speaking. But generally speaking, the people who you slobber on look and act like you. What about those of different races, those of different nationalities, those who are not dressed like you, those who are not... We've got to show grace to everybody, anywhere, all the time. And I don't just mean inside these four walls. I mean in the workplace. I mean at the cash register line. I mean at the bank teller window. That young lady running that cash register gets her head bit off more times than not. What she needs to see is somebody showing her grace. Expressing to her and showing her the undeserved gift of God. Yeah, she gave you the wrong amount of change. I doubt seriously if she was intentionally trying to steal your nickel. She miscounted. Remember, they're not taught in school today how to count change. She made a mistake. You ever made one? Lately, you'll probably make another one today. They need to experience and they need to see, hear, feel grace. The love of God. The undeserved gift of God. We don't love them because they dress like us. You don't love them because they act like us. We love them because God loved them. Let me just tell you how we sing about it. I just had this thought sitting on the front row a while ago when I grabbed up the hymnal. And let me just share with you some of what we sing about grace. In the hymn, Wonderful Grace of Jesus, the very first line, very first words say, Wonderful Grace of Jesus, greater than all my sin. Aren't you thankful? If it was greater than all your sin, isn't it greater than all their sin? Second line, Wonderful Grace of Jesus reaching to all the lost. Third line, Wonderful Grace of Jesus reaching the most defiled. That's how we sing about grace. That's how we stand up and sing, Wonderful Grace of Jesus, reaching the most defiled. But is that how we act about grace? When we see that guy, that lady, that male, that female, who in our mind is obviously homosexual by the way they dress, and you may be wrong. Just because that's the way they dress. I've done it. I know. I said, I'm preaching to the choir. I'm preaching to the preacher. Forget the choir. But we just stood in church and sang, Wonderful Grace of Jesus that reaches even the most defiled. And then most defiled walks into our business. The most defiled walks up to us at the grocery store. The most defiled passes us in the mall. What do? How do we act? Do we walk around them? Do we dodge them? Do we kind of give them one of those looks? You know the look. You know the look you give them, right? You know. But we stood in church and sang about how wonderful the grace was. That how shall my tongue describe it? By it I have been pardoned, is what the song says. We like that part of grace. I have been pardoned. Well, guess what? There is a lost and dying world. In fact, probably about 80% of the world who needs that same pardon. How are they going to find it if you and I are not demonstrating grace and showing grace to a lost and dying world? Grace greater far than all my sin and shame, we say. Next page. We just call it grace greater than our sin. Marvelous grace of our loving God. Grace that exceeds our sin and guilt. That's how we sing about our grace. What about their grace? What about their grace? Dark is the stain that we cannot hide. What can avail to wash it away? Look, there is flowing a crimson tide, whiter than snow you may be today. That's what we sing. We sing that song with gusto. You know the next one? Amazing grace, how sweet the sound, that saved a wretch like me. That's how we sing about our grace. But folks, there's a lost and dying world. There's a world of homosexuality. There's a world of prostitutes. There's a world of drug dealers. There's a world of good people who are living good lives, who are not in drugs, who are not in pornography, who are not in all those things. And they need the grace of God just as much. And until we understand that as a church in America in 2017, those numbers are going to continue to decline. I had the opportunity this week to be in a gathering with Lee Pig. I don't know if any of you know Lee. Lee's pastor at Hopewell down in Monroe. And in Lee's time there, the church has grown from about 150 to about 1,800. And we were just picking his brain. Well, you know, and one of the things he said was this. It's really stuck. To be honest with you, I don't remember much of anything else he said but this one line. He said, to my knowledge, he said, we have never done anything centered around church growth. We've never done anything and said, we're going to do this to grow the church. He said, everything we've tried to do, we've tried to do to show the love of God. Church growth is His job. Showing His love is our job. Showing grace is our job. I was recently reading a book, and one of the closing stories in the book was of a pastor who prayed one Saturday night, Lord, You send them. We'll love them. We'll love whoever You send. Y'all know the danger of prayer, right? Prayer gets you in a mess sometimes if you're not careful. We'll love whoever You send. Sunday morning, they threw open the doors and got ready for worship. And two, again, perhaps politically incorrect statement, but just basically telling his story, two obviously homosexual men come walking in the front door. Not only did they come walking in the front door, they walked in and they sat down on the very front row. And he said, I'm sitting there thinking, is this going to be a confrontation? What in the world is going on? Lord, I prayed, we'll love whoever You send us. What do I do? So he preached that morning, and at the invitation, both those men came and knelt at the altar and asked Jesus Christ into their heart. Later he discovered that the night before, one of those men had walked into the bathroom of a gay bar where he was at, and he saw himself in the mirror and was convicted and broken about what he'd become and where he was. And so he talked with his partner and said that they decided to go to church and just see what it was all about. Those two men, one of them today, since that time of being saved, it wasn't a flash in the pan. One got married, has children, has involved in his church, is serving God. The other one has started an organization that for the last 20 years has been ministering to the homosexual community, bringing many men, many women out of the homosexual lifestyle, ministering to those with AIDS and showing them the grace of God. We may never be challenged. We may never have the opportunity of that magnitude. We may never be put in a situation where we're faced with that big a, I don't know if you call that obstacle or what you call that, opportunity, I don't know. But I'm going to tell you something. Today, you're going to meet somebody, maybe in this church, maybe in your family, maybe in the restaurant where you eat lunch, who needs to experience the grace of God. They may walk in tomorrow morning with a bag full of clothes that need cleaning. They may be in a doctor's office tomorrow with a bag full of stuff that needs shredding. They may need a ride to the doctor's office. They may be in one of the 10,000 restaurants you visit while you're on vacation, the eatingest human being on earth. They may be one of your coworkers. They may be one of your clients. It may be your son or your daughter. It may be your neighbor. But we live in a world of hurt. If you don't know that, you haven't been paying attention. It hasn't been that long ago that I was sitting in a restaurant. When the waitress brought my food, I said, I'm about to pray for my food. Is there anything I can pray for you about? And immediately, big tears just began to stream down her face as she began to share what was in her heart and what was in her life. Folks, we're surrounded by people that need to know the grace that you know, the undeserved gift of God. They may not be homosexuals in a bar, may not be running drugs, may be your own son or daughter, may be your own neighbor who needs to know that God loves them. And the one thing I'm convinced that'll turn all those numbers I gave you last week around is when the Church of Jesus Christ begins to show the love and the grace of God to a hurting, broken, lonely world. I want to ask you to bow your heads this morning. Perhaps this morning you're sitting here and you yourself need the grace of God. You're here this morning and you've been in church all your life, been involved in church, worked in church, but you don't know Jesus Christ as your Savior. The undeserved gift of God is what you're being offered this morning. You need to come and ask Him into your heart. You need to come and pray and give your life to Him. And experience that grace. I would challenge others sitting in this room this morning to come and kneel at this altar and say, Lord, open my eyes. Show me the hurting. Show me the broken. Show me those that need to experience grace. See, I believe that grace is not only the only thing that will change our church, I believe it's the only thing that will change our nation. The undeserved gift of God. God, open my eyes. Maybe this morning you've been convicted and God spoke to your heart and showed you how you have a little bit of a judgmental attitude. How you tend to look at people with some not so appropriate thoughts about their life, their actions, their dress. I had the opportunity this week to hear a presentation from a group called Love Life. They're doing everything they can to fight abortion in Charlotte. The largest abortion clinic in Southeast is located on Latrobe Avenue in Charlotte, North Carolina. Nice neighborhood, right off of Monroe, Wendover. A while back, they had a young lady and her boyfriend come in and they were contemplating abortion. They had the opportunity to pray with her show her an ultrasound of her child, her unborn child. Her and her boyfriend were marvelously saved. Right there on the side street, right in front of a building where every day, 5 days a week, 6 days a week, 6 days a week, 25 to 30 children are murdered. They found out that that couple, their car was broke down. They were unable to get to work and do the things they needed to do. And so they went out and they got their car fixed. They went out and assigned them a mentor, some people who would be with them and help them, answer their questions and walk with them. On Monday, they were contemplating abortion. By Monday afternoon, they'd come to know Christ as their Savior. On Thursday, they were married. And still to this day, they have a mentor, somebody who checks in on them, who walks with them, who answers their questions. Folks, that's grace. That's grace. The world needs to see grace. Lord, help us to show grace. You need grace. Wherever you are this morning, our altar is open. You don't know Christ? You need to come and experience grace. But if you know Christ, you should be on this altar praying, Lord, let me show grace. To the unlovable, to the unpleasant, let me show grace. As we stand together.